Good day and welcome to today's National Foundation for American Policy hosted Immigrant Backlogs and Keeping Talent in America conference call. As a reminder, today's conference is being recorded. At this time, I would like to turn the conference over to the moderator, Mr. Stuart Anderson. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you. My name is Stuart Anderson, Executive Director of the National Foundation for American Policy, which is a nonpartisan public policy research organization started in 2003, focusing primarily on trade and immigration. The studies we're releasing today, Keeping Talent in America and Waiting and More Waiting, can be found on our website at www.nfap.com. I first want to thank the Carnegie Corporation of New York and the Ewing Marion Kauffman Foundation for supporting the research. Both have been strong advocates for original research that help explain immigration issues to policymakers and the public. And this issue is unique even among immigration issues. Unlike illegal immigration, which is often in the news and debated publicly, the waiting times for green cards is of enormous importance and intense interest among those waiting for the green cards, as well as their sponsors, yet barely registers on the radar of many policymakers and the public. The two studies are complementary in that they discuss problems and potential solutions in this area. In conducting the research, I came upon one shocking conclusion that I want to share with you up front. A highly skilled Indian national sponsored today for the most common skilled employment-based immigrant visa could potentially wait 70 years to receive a green card. Yes, that's 70 years. Let me explain briefly how the estimate was arrived at because it helps explain the issue. The two main reasons for the long waits for employment-based green cards are, one, the low 140,000 annual quota, which includes both the principal immigrants and any dependents, and two, the per-country limit, which restricts the number of green cards available to skilled immigrants from one country to 7% of the total. Due to the per-country limit and the quota, no more than 2,800 Indian nationals generally can receive green cards each year in the most common category, the employment-based third preference, and this is confirmed by both the State Department and from the data published by the Immigration Service. I estimate the backlog of Indians in that category to be approximately 210,000. The report goes into detail about why that estimate is reasonable based on published State Department data and information on the use of H-1B visas by Indians over the past 5 years. So if one simply takes the 2,800 allowed under the quota, and even rounding that up to 3,000 and divide that into the 210,000 people in the backlog, that explains how you would have an Indian sponsored today by an employer in the category could potentially wait up to 70 years. Now, in practice, nobody can wait that long, but it points to the current problem. And the interesting thing is even if the backlog were only 100,000 Indians, it would still mean a wait of over 30 years. Now, potential immigrants from China sponsored today could wait about 20 years in that category, but immigrants from other countries would wait about 5 years. In the employment-based second preference, where the education requirements are generally higher, Indians and Chinese wait 6 years or more, while those from other countries don't have a wait. Now, fixing the problem is important for a number of reasons. One reason is that in science and technology fields on U.S. campuses, one-half to two-thirds of the master's degrees and PhDs go to foreign nationals. Moreover, for employers, being able to offer a realistic chance of permanent residence in the United States may be the difference in that skilled foreign national working and contributing in America or leaving the U.S. to pursue opportunities back in their home country or elsewhere. The contributions of patents, innovations, and startups that we have traditionally seen from high school immigrants would be lost if the waits are simply too long. Among the solutions discussed in the research is to eliminate the per-country limit on employment-based immigrants. In fact, there is a bill recently introduced in the House Judiciary Committee that would do just that, and it would dramatically improve the situation for many Indian and Chinese nationals waiting the longest. However, the research shows that would not be enough. Reform that would go much further in ensuring talented foreign nationals stay and contribute in America is to exempt from employment-based green card quotas international students with a master's degree or higher in science, technology, engineering, or math from a U.S. university. If Congress exempted at least 50,000 such individuals a year from the quota, that would mean not only those individuals directly would be able to get green cards in a relatively quick fashion, but it would make the employment second preference used by other highly skilled immigrants, experience no wait times, and it would also help, you know, one of the lower categories as well, the third preference. Now, the research also looked at the family categories and found similarly long waits, though the distribution of countries is different. The longest waits in the family categories are for Americans sponsoring close relatives in Mexico and the Philippines. A U.S. citizen petitioning for an adult son or daughter from Mexico can expect to wait about 18 years. Some U.S. citizens petitioning for a brother or sister from the Philippines have waited since before actually the fall of the Berlin Wall, more than 20 years, if you look at the, you know, what the priority dates are right now. In November 2010, the State Department tabulated a waiting list of more than 4.5 million close relatives of U.S. citizens and lawful permanent residents. The solution in the family area is similar to employment, more visas, and in family, some adjustment in the per country limit. Whether Congress will do this in either family or employment-based immigration is at best uncertain. But I do know this, it is not in our interest to have the most important characteristics, it's not our interest to have the most important characteristic of an immigrant to America, the inability to wait a long time. I am now going to turn to two individuals who will offer their unique perspectives on this situation, and after their remarks, we'll open up if see if there are any questions. First, we'll hear from Robert Hoffman, who's Vice President of Global Public Policy for Cognizant Technology Solutions. Cognizant is a consulting and IT services company specializing in design, development, customization, implementation, and testing, and its global headquarters is in Teaneck, New Jersey. Robert?
Great. Thank you, Stuart. Cognizant is a Fortune 500 company with more than 50 global delivery centers around the world, and we provide innovative solutions to many critical industry sectors, including financial services, healthcare, life sciences, manufacturing, retail, and media and entertainment, among others. As one of the nation's leading sponsors of employment sponsor green cards for well over a decade, Cognizant strongly supports efforts to reduce the massive green card backlog, which is fueling a reverse brain drain in the U.S. A substantial number of Cognizant's associates are in various stages of the green card process, and for that reason alone, we support measures to reduce the employment sponsor green card backlog and restore the green card as an incentive to attract skilled talent to pursue their professional goals in the U.S. The green card incentive is really essential to Cognizant's success. In fact, no one person at Cognizant understands this better than our own CEO, Francisco D'Souza, who actually earned both a green card and U.S. citizenship while co-founding and building Cognizant. The competition for innovative talent is truly global, and to participate in this amazing recruitment race, we actually have more than 60 full-time recruiters here in the U.S., and more than 20 others globally who are tasked to find talent. And today we have roughly 500 job openings in the U.S. The hunt for talent also has taken us to 20 college campuses in the past 18 months where we compete with IBM, Oracle, Microsoft, and Google, among countless others, for tomorrow's innovators. While we compete with Microsoft and Google and others for talent, we are on the same side in one respect, and that's our shared belief that the current immigration system, particularly the green card process, really needs fundamental changes to advance U.S. innovation leadership. Skilled immigration reform has been on the congressional agenda for more than 5 years, so it's no secret that the current system needs improvement. The reports released today by the National Foundation for American Policy show that it is not enough to simply say that U.S. immigration does not work to advance U.S. innovation. In fact, it is counterproductive to U.S. innovation. As I noted earlier, the ability of a company to sponsor its talented workers for permanent residency is really a key recruitment tool. And given the legal and practical restrictions on advancement and geographic mobility for those here on non-immigrant visas, such as H-1B or L-1 visas, pursuing a green card is really a joint investment decision by the employer and employee, a decision to invest in developing and realizing that employee's professional goals and dreams here in the U.S. Sadly, the current immigration system is reducing, if not actually eliminating, a favorable return on a green card investment for the employer, the employee, and most important, for the U.S. economy. Today's reports are just the latest and perhaps most sobering piece of evidence of how U.S. immigration policies are making the environment for U.S. innovation and job creation very tough as time goes on. In fact, these reports really substantiate conclusions reached last May by the Kauffman Foundation, which found that tens of thousands of skilled Chinese and Indian immigrants are returning to their home countries each year. And among the top reasons that were driving this reverse brain drain that the Kauffman Foundation discovered were, among others, the overall economic opportunities and the speed of professional development. Now, green card reform is certainly not the silver bullet that will address all three of those or all of those concerns, but the growing length of time that skilled professionals have to endure to receive their green cards has to be a key factor. And as Stuart points out, the per country green card limit is extremely hard on Indian and Chinese immigrants, and it's a major reason why, if policies remain unchanged, as Stuart pointed out, and this is a very dramatic statistic, that many of the world's future innovators who were born in India and China will have to wait up to 70 years for a green card. So it's no surprise that talented U.S. college graduates from India and China are thinking twice about staying in the U.S. Now, they'll read Stuart's report, and they're going to come to a very harsh conclusion, and that's the chances of getting a green card are somewhere between slim and fat. So failure to fix the green card system will just further erode this shared desire of skilled foreign talent and the companies that hire them to come together and invest in job-creating innovation in the U.S. The investment of time and money needed for a green card today is not cheap for a company like Cognizant. Green card sponsorship represents not just an investment in talented individuals, but also in the U.S. economy's innovative capacity. And as I noted, temporary visas for skilled professionals have restrictions on professional mobility. So the quicker those individuals can obtain green cards, the quicker they are able to pursue and achieve their innovative potential here in the U.S., whether with Cognizant or as founders of their own companies. So green card delays are effectively delays in professional and innovative development, which is why foreign talent is looking to pursue their potential development outside the United States. So what does that mean for companies like Cognizant when faced with the kinds of conclusions reached in Stuart's report? It means that keeping talent at Cognizant may not necessarily mean keeping them in the U.S., but retaining them in places that allow them to better develop professionally. Indeed, the financial and professional development costs due to extended green card delays are reducing the value of green card sponsorship. And if we're faced with statistics like we've seen in Stuart's report, where the wait times actually stretch into the decades, companies will certainly question the value of green card sponsorship, which will further erode U.S. innovative competitiveness. We really can't fully solve the job creation challenge in the U.S. while leaving the green card backlog unsolved. Fortunately, as Stuart points out, as ominous as the problem sounds, policy solutions do exist, and Stuart touched on a couple of them, including the repeal of the per-country limit, which was reflected in a bill recently introduced by Mr. Chaffetz and the chairman of the House Judiciary Committee, Lamar Smith, and also ways to craft exemptions to the green card caps, such as the advanced degree green cards for those who graduate with advanced degrees from U.S. colleges and universities. These reforms will actually, as Stuart points out and as the research shows, go a great deal toward making the green card process a more effective system. It would certainly be a system that is fair to Indian and Chinese nationals who are stuck in the green card backlog. And most importantly, it will reduce the wait times and make the green card a viable tool of incentive-based investment for U.S. companies seeking to retain the best and the brightest. That's why Cognizant supports all of these reforms, as well as another proposal that would provide green cards for so-called startup companies, a so-called startup visa. But we would support that with one key caveat, and that's these green cards should be provided to innovators within companies like Cognizant who start new lines of business or new products and services that result in new jobs within the company. After all, Cognizant was actually an internal startup within Dun & Bradstreet just 17 years ago, and we should encourage similar internal startups here in the U.S. and a startup visa that applies not just to new companies, but new companies within existing companies would be a great step forward. Again, thank you, Stuart, for the opportunity to speak and appreciate the work that you've done in producing these two terrific reports.
Well, thank you, Robert, and appreciate those remarks and some very interesting ideas there on the startup visa and others. Next, we'll hear from Aman Kapoor, who is president of Immigration Voice. Immigration Voice is a national grassroots nonprofit organization of over 70,000 highly skilled, potentially future Americans spread across all 50 states, and its mission is to advocate solutions to reduce the backlogs in the employment-based green card system. Aman?
Thank you, Stuart. Hello, everyone. My name is Aman Kapoor, and I represent Immigration Voice. The study is released by National Foundation American Policy provide a valuable clarity in terms of numbers that were missing in this debate till now. Let me share the issue at hand from an immigrant's perspective, as earlier Robert did from an employer point of view, and let me also share the perspective of over a million immigrants who are likely and potential future Americans stuck in the backlog. You know, Stewart's study clearly underscores the fact that nation's high-skilled legal immigration system is outdated and broken. This is reflected in 70 years backlog in the employment-based green card category. Again, you know, there's, again, 1 million applicants that have been accumulated in the past decade in these backlogs. And the very, very long wait time spanning these 70 years and probably soon to get maybe 100 years or a century, you know, and the uncertainty caused by the green card backlogs have left thousands of skilled immigrants and their families in limbo, to say the least. You know, as a result, brain drain of talent, skills, innovation is no longer a nebulous concept, but clearly visible in everyday life. Due to these long backlogs, largest set of applicants from these emerging economies, India and China, have given up and are returning back to these, you know, in larger numbers. I personally come across a lot of immigrants every day who are returning in larger numbers due to these long backlogs. As the study points out, given the importance of the foreign-born entrepreneurs, scientists, and engineers in U.S. economy, failure to solve this problem is going to seriously threaten the level of innovation that takes place in America and the competitiveness of the most high-tech U.S. companies. You know, as one can imagine, I can share from my personal experience that there is a huge human cost to these current backlogs. The human cost and the quality of life issues translate into lower productivity in businesses across the country. Long wait times also prevent high-skilled immigrants from living to their full potential and helping the economy. In effect, the current system is designed to get the best and the brightest from across the world and choke this talent in the green card backlogs. I mean, are you kidding me? 70 years? It's like three human generations. You know, if you look at the lifespan and look at the number of years that one usually get a chance to work and earn their livelihood and make their life and contribute to the economies. You know, in 2007, Bill Gates testified in the Senate and he said that high-skilled immigrants were better off letting their newborn children apply for their parents' green card when the newborn gets to the age of 21 years. And at the time, it was considered maybe a funny remark. But if you look at Stewart's study, you know, it clearly highlights the severity and the extent of the problem, and no one is laughing over this anymore. Now, for a period of time, you know, people had a general trend, a knowledge of a general trend, or had a basic high-level idea about the backlogs and the wait times. But as a result, you know, over a period of last few years, Council for Foreign Relations, Federal Reserve Bank of Dallas, and a few other organizations have advocated removing per-country limits in the employment-based green card. As recently as a few months, U.S. Chamber of Commerce and Microsoft General Counsel Brad Smith, he testified recently in the Senate again, and David Cotton, president of Cornell University, and many others, they have all advocated eliminating per-country limits on the employment-based green card categories. And to say the least, you know, even in the Congress, Congressman Zoe Lofgren, who has championed this issue, she's a senior Democrat and the chair of Immigration Subcommittee in the House back in 2008. Congressman Lofgren and Congressman Goodlatte, who's also a senior Republican member in the House of Representatives, introduced a bipartisan bill back in August of 2008 for eliminating per-country limits, specifically in the employment-based category. Now, recently, Congressman Chaffetz and Chairman Smith, who is the current chairman of the Judiciary Committee in the House, has again introduced a bill which is called Fairness in High-Skill Immigration, again, for removing per-country limits, eliminating per-country limits in the high-skill category. But prior to this study that Stewart has introduced today and have completed, and that the study that we are discussing today, no one really understood the precise extent of the wait times given the size, the density, and the distribution of high-skill green card backlogs. And for the first time, the study lays down the numbers clearly, highlighting the extent of the problem U.S. high-skill immigration system is dealing with. Now, I have my green card, and next year I plan on becoming a U.S. citizen. I want to do the best for the country, and I know that it will be in the best interest of the U.S. to solve the severely backlogged employment-based green cards by eliminating per-country limits and changing to a more fair system based on the principle of fair first-come, first-serve. A few years back, when I applied as a student at a university, no one asked me which country I've come from. No one, when I applied again for a job, you know, no employer asked me which country I was born. Even when I applied for a temporary work visa, no one asked me my country of birth. But when it comes simply to the employment-based green card category, which is a green card that is a direct derivative of my employment, you know, all of a sudden there is this rationing system based on country of birth. As Stewart's study highlights, you know, and he indicated earlier in the call, 40% of humanity on the planet is either Chinese or Indian born. These emerging economies have heavily invested in the education system. And with the huge populations and with the extremely high rate of competitiveness among students and the quality of students in science, technology, engineering, and math and, is of very high value to anyone who is interested in innovation and running their business based in the high-tech area, including medical doctors and universities and a wide variety of different industries that are out there. And that is why relief to the science, technology, engineering, and math immigration categories and having these exemptions put in place is very important. As the study summarized in the end, there is one golden rule in economics. Capital will always follow the skill. No one can wait for 70 years, even if anybody wants to wait. These high-skill immigrants come to U.S., gain the institutional knowledge, and due to per-country limits and long wait times have started to give up on the system, returning in larger numbers, and when they leave, you know, they will take their jobs with them or work for a competitor company in another country and will create and contribute to a new ecosystem, creating more jobs somewhere else. And as the future potential Americans leave, what will happen is that the entrepreneurs will follow them, the investors will follow these skills and talent, and then eventually they will make these investments in capital and setting up new projects and hence creating new jobs in another country. In the end, eliminating per-country limits and exemptions for science, technology, engineering, and math category will help one and one country in the world only, and that country is United States of America. You will never hear from a Chinese president or an Indian prime minister making a phone call to a U.S. president asking for eliminating per-country limits in high-skill green cards in the U.S. Rather, these countries would rather want not to have these country limits be removed so that more and more high-skilled expats return home to set up businesses in the growing economies. This is not so complicated. You know, smart people such as Mayor Bloomberg recently, you know, he called it as it is, and he called it as a national suicide. My hope is that the extent of clarity that the green card backlog problem is highlighted by Stewart's study will help draw some attention to this issue to eventually solve it. Thank you for listening.
Thank you, Man. I think we can have turn it back to our operator to instruct people if there are any questions.
Thank you. If you'd like to ask a question, please signal by pressing the star key followed by the digit 1 on your telephone keypad. If you are using a speakerphone, please make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Once again, please press star 1 to signal for a question. We'll pause for a moment to give everyone an opportunity to signal for questions. Our first questioner is Aziz Hanifa with India Abroad.
Hi, Stuart. Hi, Aman. Aziz Hanifa with India Abroad. First, sort of a housekeeping question, Stuart. What was sort of the rationale behind this report and what prompted you all to do it? And also my second question, as someone who's covered Congress for many, many years, I know there have been a lot of bipartisan members who've introduced bills who are very sympathetic to sort of the contention that you all guys put out, and they have met with Immigration Voice and Aman over the years. But they all keep saying that it's unlikely that you can have a bill which would address just employment-based green card backlog being cleared as opposed to a comprehensive immigration bill. And we all know that, you know, there is not going to be a bill this year. How do you address this? I know I'm being a little cynical as a journalist, but how do you address this issue when, in spite of all the sympathy, nothing probably is going to come out of it?
Well, those are two very good questions. On the first question of what prompted the research, I think this is an issue that that our organization has followed for quite a long time, and I think when with the increasingly competitive world, and with also just with the way the immigration system works, it doesn't do any good anymore to just say, well, we're a nation of immigrants, and And, you know, we celebrate the Statue of Liberty because in practice the immigration system works by a series of very complex laws and regulations. And I think that most people will be surprised that, you know, the way the system works is for a company like Cognizant, if they have two people sitting next to each other, one from Belgium and one from India, then they sponsor both for a green card on the same day, there's a very good chance that the person from Belgium will get their green card within maybe 5 or 6 years or less, depending on the category, and the person from India might wait, you know, 10, you know, 15, 20 years or more, you know, up to this potentially 70 years that we talked about. So I think that, you know, putting numbers on this type of situation, I think most people would find kind of shocking that that's how it ends up working in the workplace today. I think it was a worthwhile endeavor, and also to look at what would be the impact of different types of reforms. Now, on the second question about whether Congress will go for smaller bills versus larger bills, I could also turn it over to my colleagues. Robert?
Sure. I think that, I think you're absolutely right that if you look at if past is prologue, the prognosis certainly doesn't look good in terms of moving legislation, because the impulse has always been to try to pull together a comprehensive bill. That said, I think that there is a clear interest within both the House and the Senate to look at some of these issues and see if there's a way to address them, because there's growing recognition that particularly in the area of skilled immigration, if we are going to get a handle on getting this economy moving, we have to address some of these very glaring problems. And the hope is that when faced with the kind of data that Stuart has produced, that Congress will act. I've been following Congress now, I'll sadly say it, a quarter of a century. And when faced with compelling information during, you know, tough circumstances, you know, Congress can and has surprised people in a positive way. So when faced with wait times that Stuart is showing, and, you know, that, you know, complementing previous studies that show that highly skilled people are leaving, maybe that will compel Congress to say, look, we have to look at these issues, not just in the context of immigration, but more importantly, in the context of U.S. economic growth and competitiveness. And so we need to look at issues like repealing the per-country limit. We need to look at the STEM exemption, which is the subject of a congressional hearing today. And the fact that Congresswoman Lofgren introduced a strictly employer-based immigration bill, the fact that we've seen individual bills on per-country limit introduced, and there's talk about doing a STEM exemption, you know, we may see an opportunity. Again, I think the odds are against it, but I think that the combination of a growing interest generally about linking highly skilled immigration with future economic growth and the statistics that Stuart is bringing to the table really make the need for these types of legislation and these types of solutions a lot more compelling.
Aman?
Yeah, thank you, Stuart. That's actually both, they were excellent questions from Aziz, I would agree with my friend Robert here that Congress has surprised, given the nature of the debate, which has been for last many years, totally focused on CIR, the comprehensive bill. There seems to be some interest gathering in both sides of the aisle, in both the House and the Senate, to do something on this issue. And I think the timing-wise, Stuart's study and the numbers that come out from these studies is going to present a compelling argument and the reason why this should be done now. I mean, it cannot wait any longer. I mean, that's what these studies are about. And we were surprised when we saw these numbers that the extent, the density, and the distribution of these applicants that are in the backlog and how it will be unfolded during a period of time. It's just amazing.
Great, thank you. Are there additional questions?
As a reminder, that is star 1 to signal for a question at this time, star 1.
while we're waiting, I have a question on sort of the human element here. In the example I gave both Aman and Robert, when you have a situation where you have some people have to wait an extremely long time and possibly other people don't have to wait at all or wait very little time, you know, how is that coped with in the workplace and in the family life when people have to experience these types of long waits? Either Robert or Aman.
Aman, you want to take that one?
Sure, I'll take that one. Thank you. You see, the way that it unfolds in the real-life work situation, and as a matter of practical experience, I can share that when the wait times are less for a specific number of group of individuals and the wait times span decades, it underscores the fact the quality of life issues that range from everything that one can think of, you know, going and having the driver's licenses, getting them renewed, going and visiting home countries where individuals have come from, maybe visiting a sick parent or maybe attending to an emergency anywhere. And even when children or universities would like to give scholarships, children not being able to get those scholarships because their green card application is still pending. And all these issues that come across as a quality of life issues when bundled together and when compared with other in the workplace, they do create an environment where individuals who are waiting, they would want to not stay here. And that is why we see this increasing trend. Once upon a time, this was a nebulous concept that, people will leave. Well, it is happening now. And the reason why it is happening is because when somebody sees that there is a preferential treatment given to one set of individuals over the other set of employees, then this is how it unfolds, where more and more employees are leaving and specifically going back to China and India because the huge employment-based green card backlog. And then add to the complexity, the emerging economies are doing well in terms of their growth rate and the opportunities for these immigrants to go back home. So it's a perfect storm in the making. And it all starts from these per country limits where there is this quota and ration system based on the country of birth. Thank you.
Great. I don't know if we had any additional questions.
We did have Mr. Hennepin signal again. We'll go back to him.
Yeah, since there is nobody online, I thought I'll throw in something again, which is also in the form of an opinion. The report made so much sense. And in terms of competitiveness and everything else, and it would be great if the Obama administration and President Obama himself could use the bully pulpit to explain to the population at large how much such a bill addressing only this issue would make a lot of sense. But in the present environment with the unemployment and everything else, and then, of course, the outsourcing defensive posture which the administration seems to be taking, and the unions and all of them thrown in, you know, the perception that we created that quote-unquote foreigners are going to get jobs. How do you fight all this? Isn't it a case of just walking uphill, especially when you would love the administration to use the bully pulpit, but it's highly unlikely that they would do it?
Sir, can I take that one for a second?
Yeah, please.
It's a terrific observation, first and foremost. Interestingly, the three key reforms that Stuart highlights in his report, or in both reports, really the exemption for advanced degree STEM graduates in U.S. universities, the repeal of per country limit, and the recapture of unused green cards. All three of those measures were endorsed, and Stuart and Aman could correct me if I'm wrong in terms of the timing, but I do recall a few years ago, IEEE, along with, I believe it was the semiconductor industry, working with Congresswoman Lofgren when she was then the chair of the House Immigration Subcommittee, essentially agreed on all three of those measures as a way of addressing the green card backlog, which was not as bad then as it is now, because they were concerned then, and this was back in 2007, 2008, about the declining attractiveness of the green card as an incentive to stay because of the long wait times, the disparity that both Aman and Stuart pointed out. So there was interest even then, and it was supported by Republicans, Democrats, IEEE, which is organized labor. So these aren't the kinds of issues that give rise to people's blood pressure generally on immigration, on the general issues. So this goes back, I think, Aziz, to your first question, is, you know, can we, you know, since there's clear agreement on all of these things and given the clear need and the problem that Stuart has outlined in this report, you would think that, again, that would create an environment where we can address the green card backlog in the context of economic renewal rather than the context of immigration reform.
And, Stuart, can I add to what...
Sure, of course.
All right, thank you. Well, that, of course, that's a very fine observation, given the fact that we are having a tough environment and... the unemployment and the union and all the other issues going on, Aziz. But at the same time, you see, when we are talking about these issues, specifically removing per country limits, we're not talking about bringing any new immigrants from outside. What we're talking about is people who are already here and have been here for years. And by giving green cards or by eliminating country limits and then giving green cards to this specific set of people, you know, what we are doing is we are enabling them so that they can graduate and go to the next stage in their life, and most of them want to start their own businesses. I mean, we have 1 million people who are stuck in the backlogs. You know, that even if 10% of these highly skilled immigrants who have been, who have traveled across the world, who have higher education degrees, they are willing to start their businesses and they have their own ideas, they won't give their ideas. They would want to start their own businesses. And at the end, even 10% of these 1 million people, if they start businesses, we are talking about 100,000 new businesses, which will create new jobs. So basically, even though it's a tough tough environment and because of the unemployment situation and all the other debates that are going on, basically this is actually a potential solution rather than adding to that debate as a problem. And that's the position that we take. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Aman. If there are no other questions, I think we will thank all the participants on the call, and also thank Aman and Robert for their time and their insights. The studies are available on our website at www.nfap.com. Thank you very much.
That concludes today's conference. We thank you for your participation.